This is Spectator Radio, and you're listening to Table Talk with Olivia Potts and Laura Prendergast. Hello, and welcome to Table Talk, Spectator Life's food and drink podcast. I'm Laura Prendergast.
And I'm Livy Potts, the Spectator Life's vintage chef. In this brand new podcast, we'll be interviewing a different guest each episode and talking to them about their life through food, looking at starters, mains and puddings, where we ask them about their childhood, food in their adult life, and if it's played a part in their career.
And we're delighted to be joined by Sophia Money Coutts. She's the former features editor at Tatler magazine and is now a freelance journalist and a Sunday Telegraph columnist. Her new book, The Plus One, came out earlier this year. Sophia, welcome.
Hi, guys.
Hello. So let's start at the beginning, Sophia. Mm-hmm. Tell us about what your favourite food was when you were little.
When I was really quite young, I must have been four or so, coming back from school, I really vividly remember being treated by my mum, probably, every couple of weeks or something, to Angel Delight, to butterscotch Angel Delight. She would make sort of ramekins of it in the fridge for us when we got home from school. It was like a tea time treat. Not all the time, but often enough that that's my sort of my loveliest sort of childhood memory when it comes to food. It was just sitting at the kitchen table, having taken a ramekin out, perfectly set, and a spoon. And then I don't think one was ever quite enough, actually. I remember being a bit sad when I finished that one, but I'm pretty sure we weren't allowed another one.
When
now
did
that
you
I'm
last have it?
33 and not four. I mean, probably when I was like 7 or 8 or something.
Maybe it'll be the next big thing. I'll serve it at all dinner parties. It's a new canapé.
It would actually be a very good, it'd be a really brilliant, easy retro dinner party.
What a perfect make-ahead pudding.
That's a really good point.
You just tell people it was a pot of creme caramel and people believe you.
Very posh recipe.
Actually, it's just Angel Delight.
Yeah, anyone else who had it at school when they were four would be like, no, I am on to you.
This tastes terribly familiar. Yeah.
Do you think people are quite snooty about puddings like Angel Delight, that they think it's sort of not really appropriate?
Yeah, I guess because it's powdered and it's from a packet, right? People would be. And also these days, imagine a mother giving a child Angel Delight out of a packet. I mean, that just wouldn't happen. It's all those squeezy fruit ones, isn't it? But yeah, definitely there's a sort of snobbery around things like that, but it's delicious.
Is there anything you, food-wise, you are snobby or snooty about? Is there things that you just think, oh no, not for me?
Do you know what? I'm A, incredibly greedy, and B, I think very unfussy. So no, there's not much that I would turn my nose up, I don't think. I've always wanted to, but never have been, one of those women who sort of, I've got girlfriends who they'll go out for dinner or something and they won't eat the fat off the steak, or they'll sort of delicately pick around bits. I'm always the person who eats all the fat all those bits that people sort of wrinkle their nose at and think, oh, gross. And then I look at my plate and it's all gone and the chop is like gnawed down to a bone.
I think I'd have to stop myself from taking other people's cut-offs, to be
honest,
exactly.
At that
stage.
Oh. And Sophia, what were meals like when you were little? Did you have big family meals or smaller ones?
Yes, I have an enormous family on both sides. My parents have separated and divorced, and my dad remarried, and I've got steps on that side. And my mum has a son from her second marriage. So yes, kind of family meal times to me do very much mean sitting around a table. Incredibly noisy, certainly with my dad and my stepmom live in Spain. And if all, they've got 5 children between them, and if we are all out there with our other halves at the same time, mealtimes, particularly suppers in Spain, sort of get out of control. Endless Spanish wine and delicious Spanish food, and it's just as a very raucous sort of occasion. But I love that. That's what it should be, I think, right? Instead of, sitting.
Coming together and enjoying food.
A celebration, and everyone shouting over one another and getting drunk and being very full and then sort of toddling off to bed at the end of it. It's the best.
When you were younger, in a sort of like child with parents or step-parent situation, what would they cook for you?
Trying to remember. Risotto is one of my things that I remember mum always making, sort of big pans of risotto as a sort of really delicious, sticky comfort food, and probably a way of trying to get some vegetables into us, I would imagine. Although actually I wasn't never that bad with veg. Yeah, risottos. But also, my mum is a proper sort of, would make proper nursery food, so cottage pies, shepherd's pies, lasagnas. Because when you've got lots of children, that's a lot easier, right?
Mass catering,
yeah. So that, and then maybe, I don't know, Angel Delight for pudding.
Sounds perfect.
The dream.
And when you were younger, was food straightforward nourishment, or was it more bound up with emotion? How do you remember it?
There were moments when it was bound up with emotion. When I was 8 when my parents separated, and then my dad started going out with my stepmother, and we would go up to London from our mums every other weekend. And my stepmum was amazing at, she basically had fondue every weekend for about several years when they started going out. Because she saw it as a distraction, a meal that was a distraction. It was a fun thing to do.
An entertainment.
Exactly. So we'd have our bits of bread on the end of the spears and we'd drop it in the cheese, or meat fondues we did a lot, or shabu shabu, which is slithers of meat. It's a Japanese one which you cook in sort of consomme. And it was very much exactly an entertainment. We could spend 2 hours at the dining room table, kitchen table, doing that and having fun, as opposed to all sitting there all feeling a bit sad because our parents were divorced and we weren't quite sure what was going on. So yeah, weirdly, fondues. Definitely cheese fondue for some reason have a sort of emotional connection in my head, and I think it's because of that. And I would recommend it to anyone who's got children who are struggling.
So make them some fondue. Fondue's an escapism for you.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Do you still have it now?
Do you know what? I did buy a fondue set maybe a couple of years ago. I just had some mates over for dinner to try and recreate that thing. It wasn't quite the same actually, because I suppose I wasn't a sort of 8-year-old just stuffing my face with bits of bread and cheese. But no, they are still, I mean, retro but really good fun. So yeah, I'm a fan.
Fire, obviously, one of the things that people have so often quite strong emotions about is school food. What was school food like for you?
Again, a bit like eating all the fat off steaks or whatever, bacon. It is very fashionable, I think, to say, oh God, school food, it was so terrible. But I went to Wickham Abbey and it was pretty amazing. And it was also very much a running joke among all my friends. I was not sporty because I was sort of quite greedy. I was quite a chubby teenager. But the one occasion without fail that I moved faster than anyone else was always the 12:55 p.m. lunch bell. And whenever that went, whatever class I'd be sitting in, I would literally fling my book bag on my back and run. And I had these enormous steel toe cap Doc Martens. I mean, why I needed those at a girls' boarding school in Buckinghamshire, I do not know. But I would run so quickly, like, you know, outdoing Usain Bolt or Cheetah or anyone, to the school dining room and get in the queue. So I was first in the queue, basically, and then eat. Yeah, but our school food was amazing. We had a salad bar. We had, there was one very odd moment when they tried to give us ostrich burgers, but apart from that, and their puddings at school were amazing. I remember, you know, like just chocolate pudding, chocolate custard, all sorts of sponges and lots of custard, and pancake day. It was always a sort of competition to see who could go back for the most number of pancakes without irritating Rita, the quite scary sort of chef at the school. I think my friend Eloise got to 17 pancakes one year.
Wow.
And that was a sort of record.
That's quite something.
Yes.
Were there any difficulties, you know, with food? Because I suppose girls can sometimes be a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I had various friends who clearly were sort of struggling with anorexia and bulimia at points. There was a hideous thing at our school that we were weighed at the beginning and end of every term, and if you had lost too much, you would be potentially sent to what we called San, which was a, you know, old school sanitarium, where there were two nurses, and you'd have to eat your meals in front of them. So at our school, you'd have to get your tray, put food on your tray, and then march through the dining room and up some stairs to the San. And it was just, I mean, I'm sure it wouldn't happen these days. It would be sort of deemed a bit cruel and unfair to march girls through the dining room as a sort of black mark. So yeah, I mean, I did spend 7 years from 11 to 18 with lots of girls who obviously were struggling and had all sorts of problems. But I imagine, I mean, I was at school from 1996 to 2003, not that long ago, but I would imagine it's changed a lot since, and everyone's much more on it and slightly more sensitive, I would think.
Yeah, well, I hope so.
I would hope so, yes.
And what about now? I mean, the major difference as you go into adulthood is that you're sort of responsible for it yourself, and,
yes,
and you can either cook it or order Domino's for the rest of your life. Do you cook? Do you enjoy cooking?
I do. I love cooking. It's such a joy, isn't it, to be in your kitchen and have that time to make something, to prepare something in a sort of, you know, trendy mindfulness way. You can just concentrate on that. But I don't think I'm very good at it. That's the trouble. I really love it, but I am slightly chaotic in general, I think, as a person, but also when it comes to recipes. So I will start off, you know, with good intentions, and I'll set the oven to 200 degrees and I'll start off chopping everything like they tell me. But about halfway through a recipe, I'll suddenly think, nah, they don't mean that. Like, surely not. And I'll go a bit off piece, which potentially is why things sometimes don't turn out totally as expected. And actually, I do have one of my favourite recipe books. I love Nigel Slater, because they're quite simple, right? You'd have to be quite an idiot to not be able to manage a Nigel Slater recipe. And he's brilliant. But I do have a Nigel Slater Eat. It's a yellow book. But I have scribbled sort of my own notes over that, as if I know better than Nigel Slater. It's completely
ridiculous.
The King Nigel. Honestly, no, should be 20 minutes. Or no, should be. It's really funny, this sort of Mark recipe book. So I love it, and I try. But the results aren't always what I intend.
That sounds a bit like me, because maybe you're a brilliant cook. I'm sort of more inclined to go out and trust the experts. Do you like eating out as well?
I love eating out. I think, you know, obviously we're in London. We've got everything on our doorstep. Although actually getting reservations anywhere can be quite difficult. It's my sort of least favourite thing about the restaurant scene in London. But yeah, I mean, I love going to any restaurant, frankly, any sort of cuisine, experimenting with new cuisines or new restaurants is a complete joy.
Have you got a favourite one?
In London? Oh, a favourite London restaurant. I mean, my friends all laugh. If I have a choice, I went Valentine's Day the year before last. We all just went to Pizza Express on the King's Road. I really love a Fiorentina pizza, which is the one with egg on it. Mm-hmm. Always have to have a pizza with egg on it. So that's a favourite. I'm not massively into terribly posh restaurants. Very, very fussy, expensive. I don't think necessarily those have to be the best. Well, those wouldn't be my best top choice.
And what do you think about the trend for small plates? Do you like lots of choice and lots of little nibbly bits, or would you rather just have all your chips to yourself?
It completely depends on who you're with, doesn't it? Because, for instance, if I was out for dinner with my sister, who's the person I sort of know best in the world, we'd be all right about sort of sharing. If you're out for lunch or dinner with someone you don't know that well and you have sharing plates, what if, this is my sort of nightmare scenario, they cut something in half and one is clearly smaller, so you feel like you have to have the smaller half and then they're going to get the bigger half. That sort of thing makes me, it sort of brings me out in a sweat. It's just not a very, it doesn't make eating a sort of comfortable experience,
no,
does it? Which is what it should
tense.
Be.
Yeah.
So I would say that completely depends on who you're out with.
What's your comfort food?
Anything stodgy, really. So, like, actually, risotto, I mentioned earlier, my mum's risotto. So I love making risotto, actually. Although, again, I sort of end up, it's always too sort of glutinous sometimes, mine, at the end. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. So risotto or, I mean, really, it's quite basic, this, but pasta and pesto. It's just a bowl of that on my sofa. There's I always joke and say it's the world's most expensive fruit and vegetable shop near where I live in Turnham Green, and they sell this amazing pesto. I mean, it's like £7 a jar or something ludicrous, but it is so delicious. I mean, I could practically eat it by the spoon. So that on sort of fresh pasta is just, yeah, my idea of heaven.
So you mentioned your time at school, and I guess, you know, eating habits are often formed in those kind of years. I mean, you know, we now live in the era of clean eating and all these different diets. Do you pay attention to that, or do you try and avoid all of that?
Again, I've had my moments with diets. I think probably anybody who went to a girls' boarding school has had moments with sort of worrying about, you know, body conscious moments. And we've grown away. I certainly grew up with lots of friends who had issues, as I said. So, I've had my moments of thinking, oh, God, I need to lose 10 stone. Or, oh, God, I, you know, worrying and looking in the mirror and being like, oh, my God. But I sort of think I've come through that. I think like everyone, I tried them all. I did Atkins 5-2, all sorts of mad things. No carbs, no this, no that. And then what I did realise quite late, relatively late, after I left uni, actually, I got into running, and I realised that I could eat what I want, relatively speaking, as long as I exercise. So that's my thing now. I sort of don't ever rule out things, because I think that's very bad to say, no, I'm not going to eat toast this week, or no, I'm not going to eat something else. I just think psychologically that's bad. So I basically eat as much as I want, but I will make sure I exercise properly, because I think that's a sort of happy balance in a way.
Tell us about your worst eating experience.
I think it does have to be, it was a classic gap year sort of scenario, this. We were in northern Thailand, and there was a group of us on one of those sort of backpacking 3-day trips, and we were with a sort of extraordinary guide, and he, not only, we stopped one night in a sort of remote village in northern Thailand, he not only just said that we should maybe try smoking opium, quite weird, but obviously we were sort of 19, so we went, yeah, why not? He then decided to say that we should also try and eat deep-fried cockroaches. And we, again, sort of thought it was amusing. I mean, yes, of course, experiment, try it. So we did. And I just remember them being a sort of shell, basically, like a charred shell. So not actually totally repulsive, not sort of, you know, if you watch I'm a Celebrity and they're doing all those challenges and they're eating sort of witchetty grubs and things that seem to spurt.
Yeah.
Things that spurt, I think. Animals that would spurt if you bite into them, that's not nice. But I don't remember the cockroach spurting. I just remember being dry and awful. So I wouldn't probably recommend hurrying to Thailand and eating deep fried cockroaches.
And for a more mundane working lunch, what would you go for?
I have to say, Pret for several years. I went freelance in November, and I honestly think Pret might be forced to issue some sort of profit warning quite soon, because being at home, I'm not going to Pret every day. Back when I was in an office in central London, I'd get my breakfast from Pret, my lunch from Pret. If I was working late, go and get some sort of sandwich for dinner as well. It's just my absolute go-to. I love it.
It is the thing I miss most, having gone freelance.
Yeah, see, it's so weird that, isn't it?
I really miss Pret a Manger.
Yeah. I don't know about this though, because we have a Pret near here, and it's one of the few places you can get sandwiches in Westminster. And I'm so bored of Pret.
I never. Do you see? I always think I'm going to get bored of it, and I just don't. And actually, I have thanked them in the acknowledgement of my book, because I spent so long when I wrote it, when I was still working at Tatler, so I'd go in the morning before work and do a sort of hour there, and I'd eat their sun-dried tomato and egg baguettes, because they're the best things in the whole world. And I don't have that now, and I just never ever got bored of it. And I'm actually hoping, my sister used to work for Pret, and I know they give 50% off cards to certain lovely people, so I was thinking, when I put them in my acknowledgements, am I going to get a 50% off card from Pret?
I have to confess that a couple of years ago I did ask for a Pret gift card for Christmas, and I got it.
Did you?
Completely delighted, yeah.
I mean, yeah, they're just brilliant. I love them. Won't hear a bad word said against them, basically. So that is my working staple.
And after work, what's your tipple?
Well, do you know what? It slightly depends on the time of year. Again, normally I would say absolutely red wine, straight in, glass of red wine, heaven. Not a very heavy, thick one, something light. But because, yeah, sort of summer, then I sort of sometimes, from about May onwards until probably September, I'll then shift into... It's such a cliche, but I'll be ordering rosé in the pub. And I mean, it's awful. I've written about this before, actually, that thing of how we suddenly all go, yes, can we have very pale rosé, please? Very, very pale rosé. But I don't really know what that means. But in fact, a friend of mine told me last summer when I wrote about this, she said, yeah, it's abbreviated to VPR. You're just going to say, I need a glass of VPR, very pale rosé. I mean, isn't that awful?
I remember when I first started drinking white wine, and they'd say, you know, you get up and order a glass of white wine, they say, do you mind what you have? And I'd say, oh, just not Chardonnay. Anything but Chardonnay. I'd never drunk Chardonnay.
Exactly.
I just knew that's what you said. And now I realise that actually, Chardonnay is delightful.
Yes.
I don't know what was wrong with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't it the footballer's wife condition?
I think it did real damage. Yeah. Exactly. And then,
it was just to be avoided. And I clearly thought I was very refined, saying anything but not an oaky Chardonnay.
But I do the thing. I slightly do that now. My go-to red wine will be Pinot Noir, because I think that's sort of... I always thought that sounded quite grown up.
I mean,
I do actually like it as well, because it's light and it's sort of sweeter, and
very
I love
drinkable.
It. But I would always go, yes, a glass of Pinot Noir, please. As if I sort of knew. I mean, I know nothing about wine. I love it. It's my favourite thing. But I know pathetically little about it.
And what about dinner parties? Are you...
Yes, I don't hold them very often, because it's a lot of faff and work, isn't it, at a dinner party?
It is.
But there's nothing nicer than having all your mates around a table. And also then you don't have to go home afterwards, you're right there.
You can just roll in.
So that's almost my favourite bit. Yeah, I love a dinner party, love going to other people's, although I'm not a terribly good late night person. I always have to sort of sneak away to go to bed. But it is just a lot of work.
And what would you serve at a dinner party? What's a good dinner party dish for you?
Yeah, I think, oh God, it's that thing of you don't want to be rushing around manically, sort of your face red because you keep opening the oven and it keeps steaming up, making stuff on the night, I would say. So if you can, because I'm obviously such an expert, whatever I've made from Nigel Slater, make it before. If you've got something you can shove in the oven, or in the winter, I will always do some sort of stew. It's a really good Jamie Oliver stew, actually. I think he calls it Jules's favourite stew. That and some baked sweet potatoes is sort of my idea of, heaven.
What about pudding? Would you ever serve Angel tonight?
I'm obviously going to after this. But actually, I just think people don't really eat puddings a lot of the time. So I'm really lazy when it comes to this. And I tend to just buy an enormous bar of dairy milk and then throw it on the table when I'm doing, say, coffee or tea. Because everyone likes chocolate, and that's all right. And I just think making a pudding, or maybe cheese, but I never basically will make pudding, and to the extent that actually friends quite often will say, now do you want me to bring pudding, and I still say sort of no, because I don't want them to be put out. I say no, don't worry, it's all fine, and then I just produce my bar of dairy milk.
Do you like puddings?
Do you know what? If I had, it's always that question, isn't it? Are you a starter or a pudding person? I'm more of a sort of savoury starter person, yeah. I would say. I mean, yes, I'll 100% eat it if it's in front of me because I love food. But I'm not really, I always want something sweet, but that could just be 2 or 3 or 20 squares of dairy milk.
Doesn't need to be something fancy.
No.
So Sophia, tell us about your book. What's it about?
My book, it's called The Plus One, and it's about, my heroine is called Polly, and she's just turned 30. She's a bit gloomy. It's the beginning of the year, it's January. She's stuck in this job. She works for a magazine called Posh, with an exclamation mark, like hello. And she doesn't really want to be there. She hasn't had sex for several years, basically. Her love life is desperate. All her friends are getting married and having babies, and she goes to the pub and listens to all of them planning their weddings and what coloured napkin rings they're going to have at their wedding, and just, it hasn't happened for her. And then one day she gets sent up to Yorkshire to interview the playboy son of a duke for Posh. And it all unfolds from there, basically. So it's quite Jilly Cooper, anyway.
Is there a food element to it? Are there lots of boozy parties?
Yes, there are lots of parties. I mean, it's obviously slightly based on my 5 years working at Tatler. So he's called Jasper, the Marquess of Milton. And so when she first goes up to stay at the castle with Jasper, it's a shooting weekend. And so there is a dinner party scene. I think they have grouse, actually. And so it's a very traditional, posh, old school scene, big dining room, candles, butler pouring wine, grouse and some sort of syllabub and cheese. So yes, she's suddenly thrown into this environment which she knows not very much about, and the sort of place where, actually I remember with an ex-boyfriend of mine who was shooting mad and I had to go and stay in lots of sort of drafty piles with him, the sort of place where if you pass the port the wrong way, you'd sort of be sent out, basically sent to bed in disgrace. So there's a bit of that, and she's sort of uncomfortable because she doesn't know, you know, any of these archaic mad rules.
And is that an arena you became more comfortable in, or do you still think it's...
I think certain things like that are quite silly, a bit stuffy. I mean, I love my dad occasionally. He will, my dad and my stepmom are quite sticklers for sort of rules like that. I think, what is the worst that can happen if you accidentally don't pass the port the wrong way, the right way, or you cut the nose off the cheese, or, you know, there are certain things that people just sort of go mad about, and I think, well, yeah, come on.
And so have you ever committed sort of one of these food faux pas and then been chastised for it?
A food faux pas? I went with an ex-boyfriend of mine years ago. He was an academic and he was just moving to Sheffield, and we went out to try his new local Indian, and I don't think we'd obviously ever been to an Indian restaurant together before, because you know when you arrive at an Indian restaurant and you get your basket poppadoms and your little silver, you know, pots of chutney and onions or whatever, and I immediately, because it's what we do in my family, just broke my poppadom in half and then started dipping bits of poppadom into the pot of chutney, whereupon my ex-boyfriend looked at me with such horror and basically shouted at me and was like, stop, what are you doing? And I was like, well, just eating my poppadom. It's like, no, that's revolting. You need to spoon some of the chutney onto your side plate and do it like that. And I mean, I must have been feeling very emotional because I actually cried. Oh. I think it was, he was moving to a new city and it was all different. And I found myself weeping into my poppadoms in this strange Indian restaurant for a very minor sort of offence, I would say.
I don't even think it's an offence.
I think it's totally fine.
I think you've been hugely unfairly maligned. As long as you're not double dipping, I think you're fine.
No, exactly. You don't do that. So I was, you know, very careful about that. But I just, you know, I actually, that must have been sort of 10 years ago. And ever since I've sort of been, every time I go to an Indian restaurant now, I'm really conscious of it.
Now I wonder if I've been judged.
Well, weirdly, my current boyfriend and I went to an Indian restaurant last week, and he started spooning onto his plate, and I said, oh, I have told you the story, haven't I? And he sort of nodded and looked a bit exhausted by the fact that I was about to tell him the same story for the 50th time. And I said, okay, that's fine. But he didn't shout, and I didn't spoon. I just dipped it like I normally would. But and he didn't shout at me, and I didn't cry.
That was probably a good sign.
Yeah, a happier moment.
Yeah. When it comes to parties, I mean, 5 years at Tatler, you must know a lot about the right and wrong way to host parties and canapes and drinks. I mean, do you have a strategy when you go to party? Are you positioned next to the kitchen door like I tend to be to make sure I'm getting the best of the canapes?
Yes, I mean, weddings, the scene at wedding receptions, I always think, is the worst, isn't it? Because you are so hungry and you've had 19 glasses of champagne and there are never enough canapes. So canapes I feel really strongly about. I do tend to try and work out where they're coming from and position myself quite close. But then as a woman at a wedding reception, it can be quite hard. If you've got a bag and a champagne flute in your hand, it's then quite awkward to reach and pick canapes. And then there was that story about Harry and Meghan's wedding and bowl food. I mean, bowl food for a woman at a wedding is completely impossible. It's unless you're going to put your champagne flute and your glass down at your feet, and then probably someone else in the marquee is going to then boot them over. You can't eat bowl food with any sort of elegance at all. So I love canapes, but I do find they're quite stressful, aren't they?
They are. And they're a strange point of contention. Before I got married, it was the first argument that my now husband and I had about what we were going to do for the wedding. And he said, we don't need canapes. No one likes canapes. And we were at his sister and brother-in-law's house, and we had one of those very awkward arguments where you're trying to have an argument whilst not have an argument in front of someone else. And I was going, what are you talking about? Of course we need canapes.
Yeah, and lots of them, but obviously they're very expensive. The thing that I always get a bit nervous about, but it depends how sort of drunk I am, basically, is you know when you're really starving at a wedding reception, you're still not sitting down for about another 11 hours. And so a waiter finally appears with a tray of something delicious, and you go for one and he's still there. And then you think, can I go for another one?
The answer is always yes.
Yes, exactly. I will always be the person who will then go back in for a second one in a slightly undignified manner.
I've become terribly complimentary, and that's probably the product of 17 glasses of champagne. Yeah. I just stand there telling them how delicious their canapes are until they eventually move away and I've had 9 of them.
Well, I was once at a party with someone who put a load of Yorkshire puddings into their pocket for later consumption, which I thought was
a guy, presumably.
A guy, yeah. Oh my God, interesting. But
they're so great.
Quite a good strategy. Yeah.
I mean, that, yeah. Oh my goodness, that's brave. Mm.
And who would be your ideal dinner party companions?
I always worry about this question because I just think, I mean, dinner parties can be quite stressful and intimidating, I think, anyway, if you're sitting next to someone sort of, you know, important or serious, or I'm one for, like, you know, having dinner with my mates and having a laugh and getting drunk. So I never want to say Winston Churchill or Barack Obama or Queen Victoria because I think that'd be so intimidating. You wouldn't be able to concentrate on your food at all. I'd be so nervous. So I just think it's sort of quite cringe, but my family, really, because that's when I'm happiest and we, you know, drink way too much red wine and shout across one another, as I said earlier, and that's just a very, very happy moment for me. So, yeah, no A-listers, I have to say.
Oh, that's lovely. That's really lovely. And what about, so post lots of red wine?
Post lots of red wine,
what,
yeah.
Or pale rosé, if that's what you're drinking.
Yeah, VPR.
What VPR? What's your hangover strategy? Are you an Alka-Seltzer girl, or do you just sort of ride it out? What do you do?
Do you know what? I don't think I've ever had an Alka-Seltzer.
You're not missing out.
Okay.
I love Alka-Seltzer. It's definitely a very good hangover.
No, okay. I'll try it. No, what I tend to do, if I get back to my flat and I'm sort of quite drunk and it's, you know, 1-2-ish, it's probably an incredibly bad habit, but I love Special K, the cereal, so I'll get the box down from the top of my fridge and drown it in milk, and in my head that means that I'm rehydrating because I'm using up a whole big plastic thing of milk, and then sit on my sofa sort of drunkenly spilling milk all over the place, the cereal into my mouth. And I mean, I'm sure it's bad because you're never supposed to go to bed having eaten lots of carbs. That's sort of bad for you, isn't it? Some sort of sugar or insulin spike. Anyway, who cares when you're that drunk? So that's what I tend to do, is come in and just drink loads of milk on Special K.
And just finally, what's your one great food tip?
I think, I mean, it's not going to get me a spot as a sous chef in any sort of important restaurant, this, but what I do, again, another thing, actually, sometimes if I'm drunk or if I'm just sort of can't be bothered to cook, is I always keep a loaf of sliced, you know, that delicious Warburton seedy bread. It comes in a sort of purple packet. I always, always have a loaf of that in my freezer so that if I want to make toast, I love toast, used to eat toast endlessly at boarding school. I will just get out, and sometimes it's quite hard to break a couple of slices off, but you break it off the frozen loaf and you just pop it in your toaster and you just toast it for a bit longer than you would normally. And otherwise you would throw away, you can't have fresh bread in your flat the whole time, particularly if you live on your own like I do, because you just throw bread away. So I would say, top tip, keep a loaf of bread sliced always in your freezer, and then you can have toast whenever you want.
And that's the dream.
It is a dream. Toast and Lurpak spreadable. Oh, heaven.
Sofia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for joining us on the Spectator's Food and Drink podcast. For more recipes, food history, stories, and drinks, you can head to the Spectator website.